The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Hello, and welcome to a brand new Best Podcast in Baseball. You never get a second chance to make a first impression, and this is what the first impression of the 2025 Cardinals. They go 3-0 against the Minnesota Twins. They take a lead late into the game against the Los Angeles Angels with a chance to stay unbeaten. After the season's first weekend, Jeff Gordon, they were one of four unbeaten teams, and the other three are predictably the Padres, Dodgers, and Yankees. So heady company. We've been able to see how the Cardinals are going to grow a team, but can they regrow a fan base? And that's what we'll talk about in a brand new episode of the Best Podcast in Baseball.
Cue the music.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Best Podcast in Baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by sports columnist, tip sheet author, and all-around instant offense at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch, it's Jeff Gordon. Jeff, what a weekend for the Cardinals. Who had a better weekend, you or the Cardinals?
Oh, the Cardinals. You know, I'm pretty much just on autopilot here. My family, I had good attendance at my house. I
mean,
people believe in me, but people didn't believe so much in the Cardinals, so there's work to do on that front. But they certainly did come out and make a statement with how they played.
What caught your eye about the Cardinals' 3-1 start, their first 3-0 start since 2006, and the first time they'd ever swept the opening series of a season at home at the current ballpark?
Well, I think we talked quite a bit about all these young position players ranging from prospects to young veterans who still had some growth in them, and this is the time to show it. The organization has showed a lot of patience with several of these guys, and now it's time to give them some work. And really, go down the list, everybody did something except Mason Wynn struggled with finding his stroke, which was a problem in the spring. We expect him to be back to normal because that's just who Mason Wynn is. He puts the work in. But, you know, going down the list, man, probably the number one thing was Victor Scott II. The guy just looks, we talk about a lot, looks like a ball player, carries himself like a ball player, played like a ball player, looked very confident to play. Obviously, you don't expect the home runs, but him tracking that ball down to really save a game in the gap, just looking confident at the plate, and then using his speed on the bases with great confidence.
Yeah, you mentioned it. There were 23 of the 26 active players on the opening day roster who contributed in that series sweep of the Minnesota Twins. 23. And two of the ones who did not were the starters in the next two games, Miles Michaelis and Matthew Liberatore. Michaelis got his season started against the Angels. And as we're recording this, Matthew Liberatore will start tonight, his first start as a member of the rotation for the long haul, so to speak. He's getting the runway, as they call it, against the Angels. So yeah, 23 to 26. And, you know, then Lucan Baker comes off the bench and he was the 24th and reaches base three times against the Angels. So by now they've really been able to get contribution from every corner of the roster with Matthew Liberatore on deck. That's different. That's different than you have guys usually sit on the bench and rust for a little bit. Now, yeah, I say that because it's a bit of a throwback, too, because there was a time when Tony La Russa would talk about having to engage the guys on the bench pretty early in the season, and that some of the guys who might not get a bulk of starts there through the heart of the season would see time early in the season just so they didn't come out of spring training where they were playing every other day, then go cold by not playing at all for weeks.
Yeah, I think if you look at this bench group, it's an interesting bunch. I think Michael Ciani knows what his role is. He's going to be a fielding replacement. I'm not sure how many at-bats he's going to get or how many starts he's going to get because there's so many other decisions that Ollie has to make in terms of getting guys at-bats. It will be interesting to see as this team starts giving guys days off, how much shortstop does Brendan Donovan play, because somebody's going to have to take some days in there, and can he hold up there? Is he 100% throwing and such? The other thing is, obviously, they're going to have to rotate Nolan Gorman in for more at-bats. But I do think as you start getting deeper into the season, you're naturally going to be giving guys days off. There are going to be opportunities to do that. And I think depending on matchups, like in a game like the first game against the Angels, they had a lot of lefties in their bullpen, so there wasn't a chance. But, you know, later in the game where they went with Burleson to do for a pinch hitting assignment, there are going to be a lot of games where they're going to be able to get spread at bats, go for matchups, utilize their fielding replacements as such. Mm-hmm. And I think you can see the pattern, right? You see how what Ollie's going to do with this roster.
Yeah, how did you feel about the 10th inning against the Angels, last at bat, right-hander on the mound, and Mason Wynn at the plate with Nolan Gorman available off the bench? How do you view that? Did you learning moment or an urgent moment? Where did you see that?
Yeah, he's going to be doing both, right? He's going to have learning moments and urgent moments in the same game. I would have gone ahead and taken the shot, you know, given the circumstances with Gorman, just because. Now I know you're, and of course, Mason Wynn's gaining his stroke back, and that he almost had a moment in this game where, you know, he had the return on his investment, right, in time that he's put in. But I just think in that scenario, I would have liked to have seen Gorman get an at bat in that game, and even in that spot, because the progress he made, he showed, you know, he previously, I think you want to build on that. He finally gets a start. He swings the bat well. I want to get him back in as ASAP. I would like to see him start game 5 of the season. We'll see how that plays, just for that reason, right? So you're trying
Kyle Hendricks.
against a Cardinals favorite pitcher, right?
Derek? Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Oh, my goodness. What does he got, 14 wins against our heroes?
Well, he and Miles Michaelis and Patrick Corbin had the 3 worst ERAs in baseball last year, but that's just because Hendricks didn't have enough time against the Cardinals.
There you go. But, no, I think it's – we're seeing it, you know. So, that yes, I would have taken Gorman there. But I do think Wynn is still the face of the franchise in many ways, and maybe he'll have other faces. You're wanting him to grow into this responsibility. He wants that responsibility. He works for that responsibility, and I think he'll earn that responsibility. It's just an unfortunate timing that he just wasn't quite there at that moment.
What do you make of the identity of the team so far? You know, that was a big part of the questions that I asked there towards the end of spring is what, you know, the style of play that Marmol kept talking about. He could, electric, relentless, athletic, all these words that he would use to describe it. I sat with him outside the Cardinals clubhouse and said, what does that mean? These are all adjectives, but how does this manifest? What are some examples of what we can expect to watch, that fans can expect to watch from this team? Well, we have plenty of them now. Do you think that they were quick to establish an identity?
Oh, sure. I think it is great to see. You've seen in the past a Cardinals product that slipped. Guys who weren't particularly good fielders playing because they needed the offense. Plays that are normally made not being made. Not only are you seeing the plays generally made, you know, Donovan shouldn't have thrown home in the game against the Angels, but nonetheless, for the most part, you're making all the plays and you're making plus plays. That's a product that the Cardinals fans can relate to from a marketing side. But I also like, you've got young guys who are trying to take a step. You're trying to get them to take that step with their, you know, on their toes, attacking versus sitting back. You're wanting them to be aggressive, and I think that's how you grow. So they're trying to be aggressive at the bases. They're being aggressive with their fielding. I think they're being tenacious at the plate. Mm-hmm. I see a team that is not going to just sit back, but is going to try to attack. And I think with a group of so many guys trying to establish themselves, I think that's the way to play it.
Yeah, it's a really interesting framing that could go on, you know, where previous Cardinals kind of went to the plate burdened with the expectations of being the Cardinals and being told what they had to be. You know, with this team, they get to show what they are. That's an interesting kind of twist. It's one that the Cardinals, at least some of the leaders, were really eager to see how that would play out. You know, this notion that you get to decide what kind of team this is versus everybody telling you how good you have to be or what the expectations are from the start. You know, the Cardinals really wanted to prioritize individuality. You know, they wanted to prioritize, you know, be yourself. Don't try to come in and be what you think you have to be, and a stoic or staid, or even, you know, I mean, sometimes the Cardinals clubhouse, because of the august history and everything like that, can be like, you know, the library, you know, at Christchurch College at Oxford, right? I mean, it just, it can be a little bit like people going, shh, You know, you have to get permission to do stuff. That they didn't want that. They didn't want that at all. They didn't want that perception at all. They're like, you want loud music, play loud music. You want to be yourself, be yourself. Like, just let that come. And I think what you're seeing is that starting to play out. We certainly saw it in spring on the backfields. We saw it play out in some of the games that they created, some of the inside jokes that happened. I think the push-ups at first base, and as they spread to other positions when guys made mistakes, including Mason Wynn and Nolan Arenado, they would do their push-ups if they didn't field the ball. I think those kind of things were reflective of that. And the question was, how would that personality show up in the game? We saw a lot of that. It's the wings flapping. Having Newbar as both the leadoff hitter, but also the ignition switch for so many of the team's like celebrations, that's a big part of it. I mean, he goes out and performs right away. You know, that builds confidence that he's got a magnetic quality to him. And when that magnetic quality is also being on the field and leading the team to what a run in three of the first four games, he scored in the first inning. You know, that is a boost that they couldn't have scripted better.
Well, you look at all of it, right? And I think exuberance goes with the aggression. You know, you're trying to grow.
Trying
to emerge. And you're seeing, again, going back to Victor Scott II, the way he carries himself, he's plugging in something to this group. I think you look at Jordan Walker smiling again, for instance, is something that's good. And getting him to relax, and you hear that from him, relax, be yourself, find yourself. And have fun playing this game. And this team, it's great when you're trying to show people that this is a different team and this is a group you can rally around because they're having fun. They're enjoying the game. They're trying to play it the right way. But it's just within the group for over 162 games, this is how a team develops players. This is how guys get better. This is how a vibe can grow and carry and allow the young guys to become the guys they're supposed to be. So, you know, why not go this way, right? In a year where this transition was occurring, how about a transition to just a whole different feel of guys on the field and let them and their personality come forward?
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
I think it's very clear how they can grow as a team in this way and how they can grow as a team with this identity and even, you know, compete well. Right now they look like a team that if they play like this, won't lose to their equals. They won't lose to teams that are their equals or worse. Now, does it work against teams that are their betters? We'll find out. They are definitely show the traits of a team that could grow together. That leads me to the question, Jeff, can they grow a fan base? Because attendance plummeted. There's no other way around it. I mean, they had a sellout for opening day, and then by the end of the weekend on Sunday, yes, there was bad weather. Yes, there were storms in the area, but you and I have both been to that ballpark when there was bad weather and storms in the area, and it didn't have a hard time getting up to the 35, 40,000. They had a drop of almost 44%. And then on Monday night, chilly Monday night, school night. The Cardinals do not like having home games in early April, let alone late March. And they could see it coming. An American League opponent they have Mike Trout, but this isn't peak Mike Trout on the Angels team. So not even a big draw there. Not the pitching matchup that's a big draw, all of these things. So they could see it coming, and it draws the smallest crowd in a non-pandemic season in Busch Stadium 3's history. That's 20 seasons. So they could grow a team, but is this the kind of team that can grow a fan base again?
Well, it's up to them to create the messaging, right, Derek? Because let's be honest, the messaging from ownership and upper management was terrible, as Charles Barkley would say. It was just awful. And it was just the long, you know, decades-long success was, you know, much of it taken for granted. And, you know, the best fans of baseball certainly got accustomed or even spoiled and became somewhat entitled. But, you know, let's look at it. Let's be honest. The product just was terrible 2 years ago. It was somewhat better last year. But just coming into the season, there was no excitement. You know, this team has to sell itself on how it plays the game. It's not going to sell this self going forward. It's not going to be about future Hall of Famers in their 30s, guys who are, you know, going to have a great legacy in our national pastime. It's going to be about guys earning the attention and the success by just going out and playing good baseball the way, let's say, the Milwaukee Brewers do. And that's going to be something, you know, maybe going forward.
Wait, but the Brewers, the way the Milwaukee Brewers did, they're off to a
really tough start. Yes. Some of those scores got a little bad, a little kind of tough there. Yeah. But yes, before the fall of this year. But
I believe the phrase is they got torpedoed, Jeff.
Which means also the Cardinals need to look into some of those bats as well.
They have. I can say it here on the best podcast in baseball. They have. I mean, the guy who's credited with it, you know, I mean, he worked across the way there in Jupiter. They looked at it. A couple guys swung it. They didn't stick with it. We'll see if they rethink that.
But I do think there's a new floor that, unfortunately, for the franchise, they now know what the floor is, and it's a lot lower than it ever used to be in terms of what the fan base, what's the minimum fan base. It's changed a lot.
Great point.
And so how do you build that up? Will it ever be what it was, where you outperformed your market size to a ridiculous level year after year after year, where a Tuesday night, in let's say May, when the weather's better, would have a crowd of 30,000 plus pushing 40 in some series? Yeah, maybe those days are gone. Maybe the world has changed, right? But you don't want it to completely fall apart. And from a business standpoint, I don't know that the upper management of this franchise right now knows what to do about that. Now let's see if the players know what to do about that.
Well, what do you think, Jeff? What brings fans? Well, I guess now we have to say, what brings fans back to the ballpark? Is it a star player or is it a style of play? Because I agree with you. I mean, the last few years, the way I described it in print and tried to pass along to folks is that, look, the recent team did not capture the imagination of the Cardinals. The closest they came was Albert Pujols' chase for 700 home runs, which was incredible and brought huge fans to the ballpark. But that is one of four guys ever to go on a chase like that. And it was like the perfect storm of a contending team, a returning hero, and a rare milestone. I mean, that was magic, you know, the 2022 season and how that turned out. Not to mention the fact that you also had two of the top three finishers for the National League MVP. That was a captivating team that maybe even at the time, you know, didn't seem to exhilarate folks as a team, but certainly did because of Albert Pujols. Since then, no, there's not been a team that's captured the imagination of the club. You know, you look at Adam Wainwright's try for 200 and how that went, and even the day that he got his 200th win, what that was like. Not a packed house, not a huge crowd there to see the greatest pitcher of an era go for a milestone that is rapidly fading from the game. So what brings them to the ballpark? What do you think, Jeff? Is it the stars? Is it Albert Pujols that brought people to the ballpark even years after he left? Is it the style of team that brings fans to the ballpark?
Well, I'll start with the most basic thing, and that is belief. I think that people have to, the fans have to believe in the franchise again. The franchise has had a special place in the heart of fans, and I think it still has. Baseball is still important for fans. But let's be honest, as time marches on, there's a whole new generation of fans that will or will not support the team. So this is an ongoing process of you're gonna lose a lot of your legacy fans just through attrition, and you're gonna have to wow new fans, and you have to do that, I think, by just playing a really exciting style. So belief in the franchise at a core level for people who have lost belief, and I think this is not going to be a team that has a product where you're going to come out four times a day, four times a game from the concourse to watch a guy hit and then go back to the concourse, do something else.
Yeah.
This is going to have to be a team where you're going to just watch them play the game, turn double plays, make a diving catch, steal a base, you know, make a smart play, getting back to where the fans can be engaged in the strategy of the game, the nuance of the game, and be pleased as they're engaged with the game, if they can get to that level with the team, to see the cool stuff they're doing.
But does a modern fan want that, though? I mean, I get what you're saying. I'm riveted by that style of play. I love that style of play. But does it play on TikTok?
Well, you've got to have a dynamic baseball. It can only be so dynamic by its nature, right? But
I don't know, man. Like bopping around home runs and everything like that, and torpedo bats seem to be pretty dynamic.
Well, absent a lineup where you've got guys who can, you know, Aaron Judge-sized monsters that you can unleash, superheroes that you unleash on the overmatched pitchers of the world. You're going to have to just be
– or three MVPs stacked at the top of your line.
Yeah, you're just going to have to be dynamic, you know. And, yeah, hit some home runs. That obviously is always sold. So having some pop would be important. And just push it. You know, this team did captivate a market many decades ago with a different type of game. Would that play now? Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, baseball faces a massive challenge as an industry going forward of how to keep things interesting.
Yeah,
this team can only do so much within that framework, but Ollie again seems committed to having a team that is going to play a way that allow it to be at its best, have fun doing it, and again, I think be more marketable, create more energy in the ballpark, because if the players don't feel any energy, and they certainly didn't feel any on Monday night, it's hard to sustain that over 162.
Yeah, that's very true. And you know, some of these players talk a lot about that they feed off of. I mean, Nolan Arenado's been very candid about that, you know, one of the things that brought him to St. Louis was the fan support and how much that meant to him and how much he enjoys playing in an environment that is just raucous. And, you know, the San Diego Padres have that environment. The Dodgers certainly have that environment. The Yankees less so. You know, the Red Sox have that committed group. If they play well, you know, those fans show out. We'll see what the Cardinals are like. I think it's really interesting when you talk about, like, well, so I had this conversation with David Stearns, right? I went up to him. He's the president of baseball operations for the Mets. He used to run the Brewers. I went up to him and I asked him if a team like the Mets with a huge purse and a fat wallet can run like as efficiently and as streamlined as a small market team must, how does a small market team survive? If we have, I mean, we see this, right? If the Mets are run like the Brewers were, and now the Dodgers are run like the Rays were, they just have galactically larger payrolls. Where can a smaller market team find any sort of edge whatsoever? And David said, you know, he goes, I've been asked this question in very different ways throughout, so you know, he immediately tried to yank my originality from me, but that's fine. He said, so I've had time to think about it, and so he then said, small market teams still have an edge, Jeff. And I wrote a lot about this. He said they still have an edge, and that edge is the elasticity. That was my word, not his. Roster, the notion that they're not locked into big contracts, and they don't have these, you know, with the battleships that take up space on a roster and take up a lot of money. And that makes them more nimble to change to a style of play, to change to the modern economics, to react to injuries, to utilize depth. And so he's telling me all this. And I said, that's okay. And I get it. But that essentially implies that small market teams got to be good before their good players become free agents. And that invites just this roster churn that then tries to sell. Well, that creates a situation where the small market teams are essentially feeder teams for the big market teams that pay for the stars when they're out of the years of control and hit free agency. Oh, and by the way, the small market teams to remain competitive in his argument, to remain competitive, have to use roster churn, which then means by definition, they don't have a star personality to sell to their fans. Or if they do, it's a flickering shooting star before it heads to one of the coasts. And I don't know, man, like that doesn't seem like much of a product to sell if that's what a team has to become.
Well, if the Cardinals have to become a team that's going to be 20th in payroll instead of 11th or 12th, if truly they fall, if they have to go to a whole other level below where they've been, where in the past they could at least keep a couple of guys and have something to build around, that is going to be problematic. Then you're really going to be playing the Tampa Bay Rays game, hopefully with a stadium that holds up to severe weather. And or to a lesser degree, you know, to a degree, the Brewers, you know, where Stearns was, they did a great job of being nimble and finding value and reloading. And when they had to trade somebody because they felt like this was going to be the end of the day, they were able to come up with a William Contreras. And they found a Willie Adames, but realized we couldn't keep Willie Adames. So they're paying a price for it this year. But you just sense that in 2 years they'll be back in the mix. Mm-hmm. So what do you do if you're the Cardinals? First of all, you try not to let your business decline to the point where you have to now consider yourself, you know, a 2 million attendance team instead of it, or a 1.5 million attendance team instead of a 3 million. And you're just gonna have to be smarter. You know, I mean, it's not fair, and I don't know to what degree you're ever going to get salary restraint or salary floors in the game, but you have to find guys at the international level, which this franchise has not done consistently. Mm-hmm. You need to find a bunch more guys who are at least Ivan Herrera, but presumably and hopefully better even. You know, find a guy that you spot a guy in A-ball somewhere, the way let's go back to, again, what the Rays do. Track a guy in A-ball, the other team, he runs out of time somewhere, you bring him in, you know that guy's got some growth potential. It's hard. Mm-hmm. And the organizations, that's the world they're in. And if they want to stay in the business, that's the kind of baseball operation they're going to have to run.
All right. Well, from what you saw in that first weekend, then, if the Cardinals need to sell fans on the personality of a team, did you see any of the personalities in the players and in their style of play that might be that star to market this team, that might be the player that captures the eye, like, say, Victor Scott II did for you? Do you see that there? I walk around the ballpark, and you know who I don't see in any of the advertisements? The one Hall of Famer on this team, the one surefire Hall of Famer on this team. Now, clearly, it's because they spent the winter trying to trade Nolan Arenado, but it's probably time to include him in some of the marketing. Who should join him? You know, who are some of the players who maybe have that style or that personality or the production, and maybe you have to wait a little bit to get that production, but they could spark, you know, fans and be part of the marketing.
Well, I think, and you get this, I'm sure too, you guys on the baseball side and your chats, there's a dedicated group of Lars Nootbaar haters because they feel like his personality has forced him or has created a situation where he's been oversold as a player. Because he is so agreeable, and because he is so effervescent, and he does have such an outward personality, that's great. That some people feel like, well, he's got a cute name, and he's got a personality, and he's not a ball player.
We're not going to hear from those people here for a while.
Yeah, no, right now he's looking a little bit more like, not saying he's going to be Christian Yelich or anything, but
you can go ahead.
But he's got some of that in him, right?
He has a lot of that in him. I mean, he may not have that power like that Christian Yelich took off with and won an MVP with, but he's got a lot of that in him. I mean, if on the continuum of left-handed batters with that kind of, you know, with that kind of performance, that kind of feel, that kind of profile, you know, Lars Nootbaar is somewhere in that Matt Carpenter, Christian Yelich mold. We'll see how that manifests. It probably be closer to the amount of doubles that Matt Carpenter hit with a high on base percentage and fewer home runs than Christian Yelich, but more times on base. So, I mean, he's in there, and he doesn't have that really kind of screw top swing that leads to some, you know, problems later on, but he's in that mold. I mean, you know, like, there's a reason why teams buy into projective stats like barrel rates and hard hit balls and hard hit efficiency and strike zone judgment and walk rates. There's a reason why teams spend millions based on those numbers. It's because they often play out. And for Nootbaar, he has to stay on the field, and it's four games. He hasn't done that yet. He's got to stay on the field. But the one time in his career where he got 50 consecutive games and got to play a lot between injuries, he was one of the most productive outfielders in the game. And so it's not that big of a reach. And I get exactly what you said. I mean, it's in vogue to find someone to tear down the moment you build them up. And maybe that's where this is headed. you know, fans got to tear the person down that they build up. But gosh, there was like a whole lot of preemptive tearing down there that made no sense.
Right. I mean, because he's been, I mean, people ready to discard him, some fans. And, you know, I think that 780 some OPS was just waiting to become an 820 OPS
because
with consistent at bats, right? I mean, there were stretches where obviously he was playing at all-star or even better levels for stretches where he got locked in. His approach at the plate, you know, like you say, all the metrics in terms of his swing quality, for sure. I mean, that player's there. Now, other guys on this team have personality, maybe not as the full well-rounded skill set. Alec Burleson's a guy that people can rally around. Now that he's in better shape, he can hold up over the course of the season. He's had stretches of playing as just a well above average, borderline all-star type guy for four stretches, not offensively. Again, we're talking stretches. If he can do it, he's got a personality. Wilson Contreras has got a personality. If he can stay on the field, he takes to first base. He has an aura about him. He has some presence. There are guys, as you start building this out, that are those types of guys. I mean, a guy like Brendan Donovan is just a worker. He'll just go out there and do his job. He is who he is, a very, 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 very useful player, scrappy guy, sort of an identity guy for the Cardinals. But there are guys with personality, guys who can flash some a little bit more extra. And obviously, if a guy like Walker can ever become the guy that people thought he could be a couple of years ago, oh, my goodness, that is a story. Now, he's a long way from that, but imagine if he takes off. He has a big smile doing it.
Yeah, that's a real interesting one because he does have that kind of power profile of someone who would bring fans to the ballpark. You talk about like at bats that people would stop to watch. Maybe he's the one that has that, right?
If he can get there.
If he can get there. Yeah, that's a really good that's interesting. Do they have a starting pitcher who is going to captivate the imagination and be, you know, an event pitcher? I'm not sure they do at this point. Not really. Helsley is an event closer, but are fans going to come and bet on a small lead, and or are they just going to enjoy it if they're there and it's a save opportunity? I think here's what I wonder, Jeff, is I wonder, and this goes back to what you were talking about, is the messaging from the front office. There is a belief within the Cardinals organization, and this goes back as long as I've covered them, that, you know, the performance in April is important for selling tickets down the road, that people go, well, we have this summer vacation plan or we have this summer entertainment budget, whatever, and we'll make call based on what we think of this team. And, you know, through the Tony La Russa years and into the Mike Matheny years, and the Mike Schilt years, they had rip-roaring Aprils. They really did. Past 2 years, they have not. They've only had really three losing first months of the season in the past, 30 years, and two of them came in the past 2 years. They think that that softens ticket sales for later as fans go, well, you know, they're probably not going to be around. They project out, right? Well, this is what they look like in April. Well, they're not going to be all that great later. And they feel that shows up even when the team caught stride here, I guess you think last year, when it was playing its best baseball and there weren't the best fans in baseball there to see a lot of it. So, you know, their thinking is that, you know, April helps boost ticket sales. But here's to the messaging point that you were talking about. If the Cardinals do play well in this first month and you start going, all right, well, this is an entertaining team. This is an entertaining style. They got some rising stars. They got some growing players. The fan, the number of people in the crowd, the ticket sales, those should grow too. But yet the messaging is we're going to dismantle this team. We're going to pull it apart. We're going to, you know, probably trade off folks. Then maybe why would fans want to come see that? Why would they want to come see the fleeting entertainment of a team that they've been led to believe is not going to get a chance to survive?
Well, I think that would be a decision for the front office to make as they go forward. Maybe the low attendance will help encourage them. Maybe the team's play will help encourage them. If there's a confluence between dismal attendance and yet the team is playing well, from a business standpoint, and certainly we've all written about this, the risk you take by driving away fans, how hard it is to get them back, they may make the business decision as they go into the season, like, you know what, let's try to stay with this thing. And maybe and hold your breath here. Maybe we should, maybe see if we can't lock in Ryan Helsley, you know, and just as a show of, if
oh, interesting.
A show of faith, to show the fans this commitment that they're thinking about. You know, there's a guy we develop. He's got to get paid. You know what? Shock of all shocks, maybe we'll just go ahead and pay him and hope for the best.
That would be – that is not what I expected. That's a very fascinating idea there, Gordo. Either you would make a contract commitment to sell the fans on your current and future commitment to a team that has earned that response as opposed to pulling the plug on it. That's fascinating. Be real interesting if Heim Bloom was at that press conference, for example, because that would be his deal, right? It would go into his years. But wow, that I wonder how that would play. Like, you know, they get into June and, you know, that would certainly be an action that would speak much louder than any words about, well, we'll see what's available or we'll take our opportunity where it lies. Because I think there's going to be an element of the fans that are like, why would we commit to this team when we haven't heard from ownership or management anything, but they aren't ready to commit to this team. They want to trade guys.
Yeah. It goes back to what we're talking about, having fans having a belief. And, you know, you don't want to make a signing strictly for PR purposes. You know?
Why not? Why not?
Well, I covered the Blues back when they did that sort of thing. And, they got stars. They didn't win a cup, but they did build the business. It did work from the standpoint of building
the business. You can have it both ways. You don't have to. You can sign your stars.
Well, that would be – if you signed Helsley at the same time, you got an encouraging look at, let's say, Quinn Matthews comes up at some point and shows good things. McGreevy shows good things. All of these guys that you developed are doing something positive. You got a whole lineup. You can put out a whole lineup of guys that you developed. Now you can kind of beat your chest a bit saying, hey, look, this is what we're doing. We grow our players, and now we're going to start actually keeping some of our players.
Yeah.
And it would make sense if you're just doing this from a sales standpoint. And also you'd sell the team. You would show some of the guys in that clubhouse that, you know what, we do hope to keep some of our guys that you're trying to become great players. We're paying attention and we're going to see if we can't keep some of you guys and keep the group together. Let's build something.
That's really interesting. It's going to take a paradigm shift in what fans expect, because correct me if I'm wrong, help me out. Cause we'll do this in real time. And maybe some people will be shouting at their radio or at their AirPods as they're listening to this, but when was the last player who was a prospect to emerge and arrive in St. Louis as a sensation just on their promise? Like, just be a jet. Is it Rick Ankiel?
Well, Oscar would be in that category with
Oscar. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. You know, Oscar. That's a great call.
And he tore up the minors.
That's a great call. Great call. Oscar was that guy. Albert wasn't, though. I mean, Albert had a great spring, but by the time he got to St. Louis, he then homered in his first at bat. He had sudden production. Yadier Molina wasn't that guy. He was more of a, arrive with a defensive reputation and took over games in that way. And then over time became beloved, helped that they got a championship. And he joined a team that was primed for a championship. Adam Wainwright wasn't that guy. You're right. Oscar showed up in that, but he also showed up at a time when that team was really good. He didn't have to be the tent pole that lifted the big top that everybody wanted to get under. He joined a team that had a lot of charisma, that had a lot of success, and then added his potential and, like you said, that charisma to it. I ask because, like, I don't know. Like, is JJ Weatherholt going to be that guy? Because all these other guys are going to have to perform. Jordan Walker is going to have to perform to be there. Victor Scott is going to have to perform. Mason Wynn has that ability. He's got to perform. I just wonder who's the sensation that is going to move merch before he arrives. And maybe it is JJ. We'll see.
Yeah, it's interesting because Mason Wynn's just more of a pro. He shows up and right. he's one of the most one of the best pros on the team. He just does his job.
He's dynamic defensively, Gordo. Yeah. I mean, he really is gifted defensively.
Now he starts stealing some bases and he starts hitting some gap shots.
Yeah, got to get on base. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a way of playing the game that gets your attention. It's interesting because for years and years, the Cardinals have developed guys who are good players, but kind of unspectacular. But they could fill roles. I mean, the Alan Craig syndrome, where they could come in, produce, keep the team moving forward.
Great point. Crazy,
have a phenomenal year.
Yeah.
Get big hits. But here comes Alan Craig. He's going to get a big hit. But you wouldn't say, I got to watch this. Oscar was a guy, you'd watch him. If he would have stayed alive, man, he was trying to hit the ball to Mars every time he came up to the plate. You're gonna watch that.
Yeah,
that sort of thing, right? So, yeah, I mean, I think I don't know that there's for sure that guy that's going to come along, and you know, the Brewers have that guy, maybe you know, the Reds have that guy for sure. You know, the Pirates thought they had that guy. I'm not sure, but he's certainly interesting.
Oh, they totally have that guy in Paul Skeens.
Oh, and Skeens, yeah, I was thinking of O'Neill.
Yeah,
you know, but yeah, it's a, and he's definitely show up. He's an appointment, you know. Attendance shoots up about 5,000% when he pitches.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. And they certainly don't have any pitchers that are going to be appointment viewing. They might come in and do a good job, but they don't have that guy that's going to go, oh my God, I got to come and see this.
I don't know. You know, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Anybody who does that from the pitching side is going to have to prove it. Tecoa Roby. Tecoa Roby has fantastic stuff, and he's been assigned to Double A along with JJ Weatherholt there in Springfield. And I mean, I might rank those two as top two prospects. I mean, Quinn Matthews is in Triple A, and he'd be in the mix there. He probably would fit between them in any rankings. But man, Roby was very impressive during spring. Very impressive with his stuff. I mean, it's just different stuff in the sense that just haven't seen that kind of explosive power and such ease from a pitcher in the Cardinals system for a while. Not from the right side, not like that. And he really stands out. But again, is that enough to move merch? You know, I just don't know. And I think you've really put it well, Jeff, is that they have developed competitive and dependable and complementary and important players. They really have at their best when they were a player development juggernaut. You know, they did pull off that double of being the champion in the World Series and the number one rated farm system. They did pull that off. It was more than a decade ago, but they did do it, and they fueled, like you said, with Alan Craig and that group. They did. Daniel Descalso, John Jay were part of that. They did fuel four consecutive NLCS appearances, but they didn't have that breakout star from that time. And I wonder, like, they're going to have to shift how they sell this team, because there isn't that Albert Pujols, there isn't that, you know, that star player. Well, I mean, they have Arenado, but again, he's not involved in any of their marketing here, and they might trade him. So it's such a weird time. It's almost like they have to figure out how to reach their fans, speaking in a new way. Like they're almost like they almost have to change not only their message, but they have to convince the fans to buy a different product. That's tough. You know, I mean, that's like Crest saying, hey, you know us for toothpaste, but really trust us. We're good at bubble gum, too. I mean, that just I don't know. It's so fascinating.
Yeah. A team in transition, a transition year. How about a franchise in transition?
Yeah.
Very much so.
How about a fan base in transition?
Yeah. Transition to doing other things. Hey, but it's Sunday when they have the Tink Heads heating pad giveaway. When he makes his debut at age 31, they'll have a big house for that.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking through, and this is a good way to end the podcast. We were talking through scenarios for how the Cardinals trade for Sandy Alcantara, that, you know, one of the last trades that John Mozeliak makes is the one to undo the one trade that stands out, and what would have to be involved in that, who would be untouchable, who would Haim say no, you know, all these things. And we were trying to figure out if there was a way that you could get Sandy Alcantara and his years of control. And then all of a sudden that would be the appointment viewing event pitcher. That would be the guy, right? And to kind of put it all together, like, how well would this team have to play for the Cardinals to completely rethink, oh, maybe this transition year is now an ignition year. Let's go for it. And let's get a guy who adds to the coming years, not just this one. We were workshopping that because we had a lot of time during a rain delay.
Well, what if you're up five games in late May and you're thinking, okay, it's still not time. I'm not going to see a lot of the activity in the marketplace, but you're legitimately in it. Everything, all the signs are good. Plus you got guys at AAA and AA that are all on schedule. What if all of those pieces are together and it's late May? And oh, by the way, you're trying to think, can we sell some tickets in July and August here before kids go back to school?
Yeah. Good call. All right, what's the Achilles heel? Four games in, what do you think is the Achilles heel of this team? Is it what you thought it was in spring? Is it something new? What stands out?
Yeah, you still want to see still a little uncertain about the bullpen. I mean, so far so good on balance, but you're still asking a lot of Ryan Fernandez, you know, Phil Maton, you know, good addition, probably up a couple notches from where you'd want to use him in the pecking order if you're a contender. So yeah, I still want to see that. I mean, and you know, obviously the rotation will be in transition. We'll see some younger guys get some starts at some point, but you know, so far so good. I would just say, you know, no investment in the bullpen. That's not an area where you get a lot of help for your prospects. That's still the area I'd want to see more from.
This past spring, Edward Mojica made a visit to camp, hadn't seen him in many years. And he talked about how he'd stayed away from baseball for a while and kind of had a difficult time in retirement, watching games, going back to games. He went to a few, he lives there in Miami, but he hadn't been really around the Cardinals, and they have asked him to be around. They've invited him. They've welcomed him back if he ever wanted to. And this spring he did. He came and visited for a while, came up and, you know, he reintroduced himself to me. I'm like, I'm familiar with your work. You were an all-star. Yeah. If you recall, the thing that he did upon his arrival, not only did the Cardinals send a first round pick that they were like, what did we do here with this pick to get him from the Marlins, is he immediately solidified what Mike Matheny had a difficult time pulling off in the bullpen. And that was sticking to what he called as a recipe, seventh, eighth, and ninth guy. They just constantly were in search of that seventh inning guy. And Mojica, before he was the closer, before he was an all-star, just locked down that seventh inning. In previewing the Cardinals team this year, you know, one of the concerns that they have internally and one of the areas where they think they might have some wobble is the seventh inning. And where did their first loss happen? In the seventh inning. So I think that is something to look for. You and I may feel differently about Phil Maton. He sure seems like he'd be the answer in the seventh inning. But then you need one of these guys to be in the eighth inning, and can Ryan Fernandez be that guy? But anyway, it played out on Monday exactly like one of the things that the Cardinals have some kind of question about is if they get a lead into the seventh, how do they make sure if the starter's not still there, how do they make sure that they bridge that lead to Helsley? And in the back of their mind, they have 2023 where so many games were lost right then and there. So many games that was the losing season. And they feel like that's an area right there. And was in Monday where this is where they might have a real pothole for the team that they want to be.
Yeah. And you see how Ollie wants to manage, and he's going to have to, yep, to manage aggressively as he did in that game. He's going to have that reliability in the pen. You know, I don't have any, especially early on, making the switch away from Miles at that point in the game. I think it made all the sense in the world because you kind of know what's coming next. So, we'll see, man. But, hey, maybe Chris Roycroft, right? Does anybody look the part more than him?
No. It's still an interesting assignment going in there to get a ground ball, high ground ball rate, not a guy who misses bats, but we'll see. I mean, he and Leahy have the stuff you know, and they seem to now have the poise after the experience. Very fascinating couple of right-handers. But yeah, Roycroft looks the part, throws the part, has some real vicious movement on his pitches. Not a comfortable at bat, as they say, according to hitters who have faced him, but one that they can put the ball in play against so far. So we'll see how that develops as well.
We can only hope that these games will remain interesting, Derek, and we can keep asking these tough questions.
That's exactly right. You know, people have asked me a lot about, like, what's it like covering a Cardinals team over the last few years that hasn't really been, you know, in the headlines or really a factor or very relevant in the national scene. It's like, well, the one thing about covering the Cardinals is they're never boring. When they're boring, that's when they have the biggest problem of all. And we'll see if they can avoid being boring this year. But so far, so good. They do not lack for storylines. They do not lack for things going on. They are not boring. I don't think I would have said that. There have been times in the last 2 years when they were really dull. They were really boring. And I worried that this was the most boring podcast in baseball. But we've kept it going. So here we are.
We'll make some outrageous statements. Keep people on edge.
Yeah, no kidding. Right around the dog days, you and I were just going to have hot take theater. The best podcast in baseball. We're just going to stash it. We're just going to do hot take theater. We're going to say, you know what? They should do away with the bat rules. Forget torpedo bats. I want submarine sized bats. Let's do it. Submarine sized bats made out of ceramic. So they're light. You can swing them with ferocity. Let's do that. Submarine bats. You heard it here first. Hot take theater.
Oh, well, in 2 years, Major League Baseball might go to composite bats. It may kill some people. But if they have to
I loved my ceramic bat when I was in high school. Man, it was great. I love that thing. That is Jeff Gordon, sports columnist, tip sheet author, and all-around instant offense at STLtoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. You can find his work there at STLtoday.com. That is also where you can find the best podcast in baseball. You can also find the best podcast in baseball anywhere you get your podcast, on iTunes, on Spotify, wherever else you go to get your podcast. Please rate and review it. In fact, even better, write a review. We want to hear from you, the listeners who have made this podcast possible for 13 seasons now. We want to hear from you about what you like about the podcast, if you like some of the new setups, if you've checked out the video element of the podcast, if you want us to do more on YouTube so you can see our bright and smiling faces and our home offices in the background. Which, you know, really nice. This is my treehouse studio. And, you know, it's just basically pillars of books around me. But you can't see that because this is a podcast. But if we were to add a video element, you could. So please write a review. Tell us how we're doing. You can find all of the Constant Cardinals coverage there at STLtoday.com, including something new that we launched this week. The first night game meant it was our first chance to do an e-edition. That is a online paper-like looking coverage of the paper delivered, or I'm sorry, of the Cardinals game delivered directly to you. It looks exactly like you would expect the front page of the sports page to look. It's there on your tablet, on your phone. You just read it like you would the front page of the sports section. And it has the Cardinals coverage from the previous night's game. So this is something new that we're launching. This is something new that we're pulling off. I probably on the 20-80 scout scale give myself a fine 50 for pulling it off, Jeff. I gotta get up to a 70 by today, definitely, and then 80 by the time I get to Fenway. That's the goal. But strong opening 50, I guess. Really kind of disappointed in some, but anyway, I'm learning. But we'll pull it off and we'll get better, and I think it could be a good product for us. Jeff, what do you have cooking? What you the Blues are raging. The Blues cannot be stopped. So are you writing a lot of Blues?
We are, and I'll be pinch hitting for Matt DeFranks a bit come playoff time, as he's got a little baby girl coming. So we're excited about that. But yeah, and we're going to be in just a couple hours. I'll be taping a net front presence with Matthew as we'll talk about the team that may never lose again. Derek,
very good. And Jeff is also involved in something new on the baseball coverage, as you are co-hosting Inside Pitch, the restart of Inside Pitch, with columnist Lynn Worthy as well, correct?
Yeah, we're taping that one tomorrow. That'll be up, and you'll be able to see Lynn's face all over every Cardinals story which is really making him comfortable. But Lynn's enjoying it. We're having fun with him.
That's good. See, that's why they put me on the podcast and let everybody else do the videos. Yeah. I also think that they just don't want to put me on the video because really I'm in a hotel room so much that it looks weird. It looks impersonal. So, you know, that has to be it. All right, Jeff. Well, thank you very much for joining me this week. I look forward to talking with you again. It'll be during the next homestand, I believe. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you weekly with Jeff as a recurring guest. I'm very excited about it this season. And also a cast of virtual dozens, definitely a cast of virtual dozen friends that I yank in. Maybe less than a dozen. Maybe it's a dozen. But people that I can lure into being a guest on the best podcast in baseball. For Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. This has been the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. Talk to you soon.